Thank you, Sangha.
Thank you so much, Carlita and I together work with the Thursday class, the women's class, and I'm delighted to see some of our Sangha sisters here tonight, and delighted to see all of you tonight. So thank you so much, and it's a delight to be working with Carlita this evening. So again, just please feel my deep gratitude for sharing this Monday night with all of us, right? It doesn't work if we don't show up. So, and as Carlita mentioned, we might be from all over the place in terms of where we're zooming in from. To that point, if you feel so moved to put in the chat where you're joining us from, maybe a word or two about how you're feeling. And if it's your first time, please let us know. It's fun to be here on a Monday night. And logistically, as many of you know, if you're, because I know that Monday Night Sangha has a dedicated decades worth of regulars, but we'll do in a little bit, we'll move into a sit. The sit will be about maybe between 30 and 40 minutes. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I'll talk for a bit. And then we'll have time, as Carly, to mention at the end of my talk for a chance for questions, for comments, for conversations, hopefully. And it's a great time for practice questions if anybody has any. So thank you, Elizabeth, for sharing where you're coming from Berkeley, KL in Seattle, Maria in Seattle also. I won't read them all out, but just really great. Jess, welcome. First time from Salt Lake. Beautiful. I am in Colorado. I'll say it was a beautiful spring day today, and it was about 4 inches of snow over the weekend. So it's beautiful here. St. Paul, beautiful. Thank you so much for y'all sharing in where you're coming from. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. And just fun to just get the geographic spread of where we are from Arizona and San Anselmo and lots of folks from Marin. Beautiful, beautiful. And just letting yourself take a moment to glance in, see where our Sangha mates are joining us from across the US, Melbourne, Australia. Kylie, thank you for joining us. Petaluma, Seattle, heartbroken. Thanks for being with us. Sophia, with that tender heart of yours, Las Vegas, Santa Rosa, Jeremy, welcome. Let's see, is a hope of mine whenever I teach that the place feels like there's a place of welcome and belonging. And as Carlita mentioned, all the ways in which Spirit Rock welcomes all parts of us, I also want to name all parts of the personality are welcome too, the heartbroken part, the part that's grouchy, the part that might be somewhat ambivalent about being here, and just have a sense of all parts of you across the board, however you are showing up. There's nothing for you to do, and there's nowhere else for you to be. You have already committed, and I'm just delighted that we can have this time together. All right. But let's move into the sit. I want to write a note. I'm going to do a bit of a longer guided meditation, and some people might think that's great, and some people might prefer more silence. The beautiful thing about Zoom is if you reach a point where you're like, ooh, she's doing a lot of talking. You can turn the voice down. You can you have control over the volume. So just a note on that to just take care of yourself. Also a note about your camera. It's wonderful to have your camera on so we can see each other and have a sense of our community and our Sangha here. And I know when I take classes, my camera's off, my camera's on. So just take care of yourself. Yeah, and just please again feel my delight that we get to all be here for this evening. So, without that being said, yeah, I'm gonna ask one. There's one more qualifying comment I'm gonna make in the aspiration I have whenever I have the honor of teaching that the space feels welcoming and inclusive. If I have say anything that lands as an ouch or somehow either from my ignorance or privilege or anything else, if it lands as an ouch or somehow unskillful, then please let me know. But the best way to do that would be outside of class to email me at gracefishermft@gmail. And always happy to have that conversation and really want to be careful with my speech. So if I ever am not, please, I do want to know about it. So with all that being said, I'm going to invite all of you to close your eyes or drop the gaze, whatever feels better. And just taking these initial moments to let the body come into a comfortable position. Noting if there's anything anywhere in the body, if you moved a little bit, there might be a little bit more ease. For many of us, it might be the end of a long day. So just even the rolling back of the shoulders and dropping them down, kind of opening that chest a little bit. Even leaning into the back body, if that's helpful, away from the computer or screen that you're on. I often start my sits with hand to the heart, hand to the belly, and just breathing in, of, oh, just be here. Again, that almost an exhale of there's nothing else to do and there's nowhere else to be. And just letting yourself arrive. Arrive not just in this Zoom Sangha, but in your own body. So that to that end, if it's helpful to feel into that which is supporting you, where your sit bones are resting on the couch, on the cushion, on the chair, on the bed, on the floor. Noting where your feet are, the ways in which your feet connect to the earth. Just allowing yourself to locate yourself in your own frame, in this fathom-long body of ours. Taking a moment just to check in, how is the body? And just making space for however you are, however the body is, it's okay. This noting, okay, it's just like this. And for the anchor of our sit today, in part, in honoring it being Earth Day, I thought we'd do a guided meditation through the elements. So I'm going to invite us to start with the earth element. And this is one of my favorite practices. And those of you who know me know this about me. But if it's helpful to call in your mind's eye an image for those of you in the Bay Area of Mount Tam or the kind of iconic mountains that seem to arise from the horizon, like Mount Fuji or perhaps Mount Shasta. Irish rock, perhaps in Australia. Just that sense of a visual of an undeniable earth element, like a mountain or a hillside. Trees, that iconic spirit rock image of the tree and the rock together. And sort of with a classic invitation with a mountain that's in undisturbed by the winds, by the storms. Yeah. And as we can imagine it in our mind's eye, so it is externally, so it is within this, our body. And allowing ourselves, inviting our attention just to rest in the bones, in the skull, the vertebrae, the clavicle, the shoulder blades, the rib cage. Pelvic bowl, long bones of the legs, down to the small complicated bones of the feet, the long bones of the arm, those dexterous bones in the hands. Again, just letting yourself rest in this relatively still element of our body, this earth element. Connecting perhaps again with your feet that are resting upon the earth. So it is externally, so it is within. And the mind's going to do what it does, yeah. Maybe stories, judging, comparing, list making. Okay. Again, making space for that and then gently bringing the attention back, like, wait, sweetie, come back here. resting in the bones. If it's helpful, if your hands are holding each other, to feel into the bones, one hand holding the other. Or if the hands are resting on your legs, that sense of feeling into the bones of the hands resting upon the bones of the legs. And inviting in, if possible, the felt sense of this earth element, again, of the mountain view or view of the redwoods. So sort of the image in our eyes, in the mind's eye. Resting in the steadiness, yeah, the unshakable nature of this earth element. Letting ourselves abide in this relative stillness within this body of ours. Ruth King teaches about the qualities of equanimity that run through each of these elements. Yeah. And the equanimity that can come from the steady, relative solidity, the stillness. As we allow ourselves to really come home back into this place of stillness, there's a birthright quality here. That may not always be where we live from, but it is here. So this invitation to allow yourself to return home to this relative stillness of allowing ourselves to rest in the bones in this earth element here. And then if you'd like to stay with the earth element, by all means do so. And if you'd like to change the channel, so to speak, and to transition into working with a water element. And again, an invitation to call to mind a river, a mountain stream, a creek, the ocean, some flowing, moving body of water, to allow that to fill the mind's eye. Again, that similar sense of so it is externally, the fluidity, the flow, the movement of the water element that we notice in a stream, a creek, the river. So too within our own form, right? And we can feel the saliva in our mouth, the moisture in our eyes, the flow of the blood and other fluids through our body. There's this beautiful component in this form of ours of fluidity. And again, aligning ourselves with what might be that image in the mind, the river, the creek, the stream, the ocean, the adaptability of water, the fluidity of water. That is intrinsic within this very form of our own. Yeah. The fluidity and flow, the equanimous quality of being in the flow. And again, the mind may be wandering off somewhere else and just gently bringing back the attention. Perhaps either to the image in the mind's eye of a moving body of water, and to see if we can allow our attention to have a sense of subtlety to feel into or imagine into the felt sense of the water element. You know, the earth, these numbers aren't quite right, but the earth, I think, is 78% water. The body is a little bit less, maybe 76. I think the brain is 80% water. There's a lot of fluid here. Yeah. And in allowing ourselves to align with this quality of fluidity, we also are aligning with a sense of our own power, of adaptability, flow, ease. This too is part of our birthright. There's a homecoming back into the sense of fluidity, of flow. And as I named with the earth element, you're welcome to stay here with this water element. If it feels like that would be of benefit to stay working with this element of fluidity and flow, or we can shift into the element of wind. For those of you who've been to Spirit Rock, how the wind blows the hillside grasses, or the shimmering of the aspen leaves through the wind, how the wind can tousle our hair. So calling to mind an image of the wind, which we see through other agents. Yeah. The grasses, the leaves, the bending of trees. The feel of the wind on our face. The experience of wind through our body, right? The breath, the inhalation, the exhalation. There's sort of a literal exchange between the external and the internal here, right? And being able to picture the wind element as it moves through leaves or flower petals or grasses or whatever we want to see. How it moves on water. We have that visceral sense within our own body, the exchange between the external and the internal, breathing in, breathing out. And to, I always like with the wind element to play a little bit with allowing the attention and the felt sense of the body to kind of be in this almost rocking motion of the wind air, of our breath, yeah? The inhale, the exhale. The inhale and the exhale. Can we rest our attention on the movement of the feeling of the sensation of the breath in, whether we breathe in through the nose, exhale through the mouth? No need to manipulate the breath in any way, but just paying attention. Oh, what's the sensation like? As this wind element moves through us, we see it externally and we can experience within our own form. And just allowing the attention just to rest on this inhale and exhale. This exchange between the external and the internal. This life-giving, a life-sustaining force that we often may not pay attention to. And in playing with the wind element, I do like to practice with a sort of the half breath, the inhale, and then the exhale. Noticing if the breath stays shallow or it goes deep, not in any way to change it or be critical, but just curious. How does this wind element, this movement of the breath move through the body in this moment? And then to shift one more time. To invite in the element of space. This is one of my favorite elements in the sense that there's always more space than anything else in the room. So the iconic image that's offered in working with space is just the vast blue sky above, or the expanse of the ocean if you're on the beach to the horizon. The expanse of the night sky when we're lucky enough to be kind of in a dark enough, dark park to see the incredible expanse of the Milky Way. That availability of space and expansion and spaciousness that exists above us in the heavens or out to the ocean, it is also within ourselves, yeah. And imagine inviting in that sense of spaciousness that we can see in the stars, the ocean, the bluebird, blue sky. Inviting that into the body, into the cells. Almost like inviting in a wave of spaciousness to flow through the body, through the brain, into the skull, the jaw, front of the body, the back of the body, down the arms and the legs, the sense of spaciousness that can sort of pump up the cell, in between the arteries, the fascia, the muscles, the organs. Can you allow yourself to rest in this invitation of spaciousness that is all around us? So it is externally, a starry night, a blue sky afternoon, the expanse of the ocean. That spaciousness is also available within each of us, that we can abide in the sense of spaciousness in the body. Can we allow our attention to rest here in the sense of spaciousness, whether we can have a visceral experience of it or we're imagining ourselves into it? Sense of spaciousness through the chest, through the lungs, all around us. Yeah. Again, resting in the sense that there's nothing really to do other than just drop in. Yeah. Giving yourself permission to abide in the sense of spaciousness that we can see out in the world, but it also is within us when we allow it, when we allow ourselves to be available to the possibility. Of abiding in the sense of spaciousness. And then the final element, fire. And it may be sort of imagining the sun, a beautiful clear day, the warmth of the sun on your face, on your body. And maybe we're imagining us together at night around a bonfire. So this element of heat is available to us externally, of course, resides within us. And when working with the element of fire, it can be the absence of our hands cold or of our feet cold. Where is there an absence of heat? Where in the body do you notice a presence of heat? So if either of those images resonate of the being outside in the sun, warmed by the face, or yeah, the face warmed by the sun, or us together around a bonfire, the warmth of the fire. So it is externally, so it is within this body of ours. It can generate its own heat. And again, just noticing where in the body there's a sense of warmth, a sense of coolness. And in the remaining time we have of our sit, I want to invite you to just pick one element that might resonate the most or feel most beneficial as a place to rest and to invite in more deeply. Try to keep transitioning. Some part of the body might be more identified with a sense of flow or with the earth element. And just to see what happens when you allow yourself just to rest in one or two or all of these elements. Allowing this animal body of ours to feel at home and connected to the essential elemental nature of our being. Thank you so much. And we're going to take a short break and we'll come back at Pacific Standard Time at 8 o'clock. It's about 6 minutes or so. And thank you so much. Delight to sit with you all. Thank you. Thank you, Carlita, for ringing the bell. I was just thinking, do we ring a bell to start back? And then there it was. So thank you. And welcome back, everyone. Again, so nice to be with you all tonight. For the talk, I thought we'd, you might have detected a theme in those instructions about abiding. And I wanted to talk tonight about understanding really. Or bringing awareness to the place from which we live, like where do we actually abide? Where do we abide? And Carlita and I were speaking a little bit beforehand. And I love the word abiding, and I'm sure it comes in part from the divine abodes and the realm of Viharas of loving kindness and compassion, joy and equanimity, but. Or and this notion of how do we pay attention to the place from which we live, and some varying definitions of abiding. I will share you with them, share them. To bear with patience, to endure without yielding, to wait for, to accept without objection. To remain stable or in a fixed in a state, to continue in place. And the sort of qualities of equanimity that are present in this notion of abiding, but this way, when we're not paying attention, say, to drawing in the qualities of loving kindness or compassion, joy, and equanimity, we may be abiding or residing somewhere else. Yeah. If there's sort of the default place from which we may live, which might be fear-based or anxiety-based or just dysregulated. There's a great book called Some Combination of the Words Breath, Mind, Life, or something. It doesn't matter. But the author of that book talks about how we are a nation of chest breathers and that sort of living from here up and in the action of just breathing from our chest, we miss the ability to help regulate the nervous system. It's when we can have those deeper breaths and engage the lower part of the lungs that we can activate the parasympathetic nervous system to allow us to settle down. So as many of you probably know, and I certainly know this for myself, when the system is dysregulated, it's really hard to sit. It's really hard to be quiet. It's really hard to find that place of true abiding. And I'm going to use the sense of true abiding kind of somewhat synonymously with our own Buddha nature, our true self. Those are kind of all going to be of a piece. But this way that when we are quiet, if the mind is steady and the heart is open, then we are in touch with our best selves in a way, our Buddha nature, our open heart, and being able to live from that place. But it takes some doing, right? We live in a world that's constantly kind of pulling this out and into other things and leaning forward. And the sort of the radical act of wait, I'm going to slow down and be steady to have that identification with the elements, yeah, identification with this animal body. That's living in a world that we're not really adapted to live in. The great book, The Myth of Normal by Gabor Mate, makes the point of this nervous system of ours did not evolve to do this, to be on computer, to be on the consistency with which we're on call with all the social media, all the screens, and the fast-pacedness with which we're so out of sync with the natural world. It is what it is. However, there's a sort of a a little bit of an uphill climb to try and stay regulated. And the importance, I think, of beginning when we are sitting or just in the morning or an evening to check in, leaving the question like, is this system of mine, is it regulated? And through different breath work, through the bilateral stimulation, the different somatic techniques that can help with resetting the vagus nerve in order to settle, to come back into a place where the body can really rest. But sometimes we can ask the system to rest, and the body's like, no, can't get there. And it's not necessarily a mental process, right? The physiology needs to be on board too, to be able to settle. And just like those techniques of the vagus nerve, that if you can massage with the ears as a way of helping settle or to pull down on the ears like that, just as a way of like, there are little invitations to allow the system to settle. And I think it can be important just to check in with ourselves. That line that I think it's Tara Brach quoting Rumi, but I hear Tara Brach's voice. I'm like, do you make regular visits to yourself? And by which I think she and Rumi are pointing to this notion of, can you live closely to yourself? Again, the invitation or the pressure or the push in our, for many of us of our lives, is to not do so, but to keep going and to go faster. And the busier you are, the more successful and the better. It's sort of by whose judgment? So that's sort of one piece about attending to where the nervous system is abiding. Is it more in dysregulation? Is it in regulation? And there are things we can do about it. But most importantly, to pay attention and to give ourselves a break of, well, I can't really, I'm not going to think of my best. I'm not going to respond in the best way unless I can have a sense of, oh, this is what I feel like when I'm regulated. Then we're more available. We have more of us is online, more of the brain's online, to be able to come from a more heartfelt, more clear, more wise place. That great quote from Srinivasa about wisdom and compassion are the two banks, and between the two, my life flows. When we're lucky, when we're paying attention, when we are intentional about the place from which our life flows. So often our life might be flowing between the two banks of fear and anxiety, scarcity and lack, right? So choosing and paying attention to, well, what are the river banks through which my life's river is flowing? And understanding that we do have choice. We may not be able to have choice about the externalities of our life. Some situations are the way they are. They may be pleasant, they may be unpleasant. They may be changeable, they may not be. However, through this practice, which is amazing, we have this opportunity to look at, well, where can I make choices? So I wanted to look at sort of the divine abodes of, as I keep mentioning, the Brahma Viharas, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, and sort of the not so divine abodes, which really I think many of us in our less regulated places might be living from the hindrances, right? We can be living in a place of craving, of wanting, right? Of leaning in, of not enough, coming from of not enoughness, where the mind is just kind of on in the fifth gear of comparing. This person has that, I don't. This person did this, I didn't. It can often, we don't come off the better, or if we do, it's still in that refrain of conceit. It's a judging better, worse or better, right? But this way of craving, that first hindrance of wanting something's not right, yeah, that therein lies some level of dysregulation, of dissatisfaction, which, as we know, the first noble truth is dukkha. Dissatisfaction is stress, right? Discontentment. Okay, so it's kind of, okay, built into this realm. And when are we living from that place? When the abiding and craving, it's again, it's really hard to settle. It's really hard to rest. It's really hard to be contented or steady. Yeah, there's a reaching, there's a grasping, there's a constantly moving forward. So what I'm hoping just to point to is just noting, oh, there may be times where I'm actually living from this place of craving. Does it feel good? maybe not, but the inquiry is priceless, because in that questioning, the pause that then follows is the opportunity for liberation. Yeah, the sense of the enlightenment in this moment is, oh, I can make a choice. I'm in a place of craving. Okay, what is this serving me? Maybe not. And if not, can I step out of it? Yeah. Second, the hindrances, as I know many of you know, but sort of the other side of the coin of craving is aversion. I don't like this. I don't want that. No, the blaming, the criticalness that can come with just a sense of aversion. With aversion, there's a disconnect. Yeah, there's a separation. I don't want that. I don't like that person. I don't like this. I don't like that. Yeah. And sometimes the way in which we talk to ourselves, the word choices we use, can really help point to the place from which we're living. I've noticed this in myself. There are days I'm like, oh my God, this is so beautiful, and I love this. I'm so happy to see that person, and I love that person. And there's all those words, like beauty and love and delight and gratitude, that will just be. That's nice. I like abiding there when my mind's in that place. Like, this is so nice. And noting when there's that more critical, like, don't like this, I hate that. And it's that catch of like, what's going on here? There's a dysregulation. Yeah. But allowing the markers of what words, like how the self-narration that's happening, or the comment, how the voice that seems to narrate our life, what words is that part of us using, are indicators of where we are. Yeah. Of the place from which we're abiding. And when we catch that, you're like, what's with all the negativity? What's actually needed right now? Is it rest? Is it food? Is it play? Is it taking things off our plate? But allowing what's already present in the mind to be an indicator of, sweetie, you might need to shift something. Something's not quite right. There's something that's needing attention. And I know for myself, if my mind is in kind of that aversive place, I don't like it. It's unpleasant, and just kind of that negative, like, place. Okay, well, what's possible in terms of shifting? Even the question of, like, oh, what's really being needed here? And as many of you know, there's sort of in the Buddhist psychology has sort of three main types. There's a greed type. Oh, I like that. I like that. I really like that. The aversive type. I really don't like that. That needs to be cocked. That picture is not level. And the deluded type, that's kind of like, what picture? I didn't see it. And we all might have tendencies of this, or inclinations one way or the other. I'm not really talking about the those broad strokes, but more on the habits that, if we're not paying attention to where we have been conditioned to live from, the craving, the aversion. And another coin of the hindrances of the restlessness, anxiety, worry that can be in the body. And when I was a little kid, I was one of those kids that sat at the dining room table with my leg always shaking, much to the delight of my parents. And it was sort of this consistent restlessness. Fast forward and being able to, as we did earlier tonight, just being able to sit and to settle, like, oh, this body can rest sometimes, and sometimes the body's so agitated it's really hard to sit. And the instructions may be, if it's too much, okay, do walking meditation or stand or allow the energy to move through. And with this restlessness and worry as a hindrance, just noting the distinction between when it's in the body, there's an agitation, and when it's in the mind, where the mind's kind of all over the place. Both are under the heading of hindrances, and we can work differently with them. But the attention, and what I'm pointing to tonight, is when are we living in that place where there's a constant need to go and to go and to go? And again, we live in the dominant culture that really views busyness as a marker of success. The busier you are, the more the moving, like, wow, the person gets so much done, which can be great, depending upon from where that person's moving, right? In terms of how sustainable it is. I think many of us can relate to the notions when we're kind of running on fumes or force of will, it's good for a while. It's not really sustainable. Again, so where are we abiding, and what are the qualities from which the place of that we are abiding? That Rumi quote, which I might be able to place in my handbook. Be empty of worry. Think of who created thought. Why do you stay in the prison when the door is so wide open? Move outside the tangle of fear thinking. Live in silence. Flow down and down in always widening rings of being. It's a choice. Oh, I might be able to step out of all this worry and all this restlessness. Stepping out of the tangle of fear. It's not easy, right? There are a lot of steps that might be needed to take. It may take years, but the setting the intention to step out of the tangle of fear thinking, even being aware, oh, I'm really caught in a tangle of fear thinking, which then gives us choice, even if it's in the moment. Oh, sweetie, I'm scared. Oh, okay, right. It's the turning towards, it's the naming that can release the hold. Sloth and torpor, kind of the other side of the coin. When we kind of numb out, and there are any number of ways that we can numb out on Netflix, on, you know, TikTok, on whether if Instagram, Snapchat, if you're of a certain age, you know, whatever it is, the way we can just numb out, or the drugs, alcohol, sex, too much work. We all know the ways in which we can distract ourselves in a numbing way. The way that we can just sort of dissociate out. It's too much, so some part shuts down, right? The way in which, again, the nervous system is like, I'm out. Fight, freeze, collapse. Yeah. When and where and how, if we happen to be living from that place, we're really, again, disconnected, yeah, from our own self and from those others of around us. Sometimes that's the mechanism in place. That's the strategy. Like, yes, I need to just to check out. It's too much. The system has been overwhelmed. Right. Again, coming back to Gabor Mate's point of the system is often overwhelmed. This nervous system is challenged by the living situation that we, many of us, are in. Okay. Can we tend to that to slow down? Okay. What's really needed here? And noticing if we are abiding, if we're residing in a place that tends to check out, to numb out, in the numerous ways in which we can do that, where the mind just gets really dull, the body's really fatigued. Yeah, and there's a thousand different reasons that our bodies can be fatigued, right? The physiological aspect is the illnesses that we may have, chronic or otherwise. Okay, yes, and paying attention again. Let's see if this makes sense. There's a way in which the physical body can be tired, and there can be an alertness in the mind. Yeah. When the hindrance of the sloth and torpor can point more when there's just an overall dullness, because it's a strategy to disconnect. Yeah. So being able to turn towards noticing what's happening, again, to make a choice. Well, is this really the place from which I want to live? The last hindrance, doubt, just said to be the last one to go, sort of in the mythology of the Buddhist Night of Enlightenment. Mara kept showing up like, really? Are you really going to be able to do this? You know, hand of the earth, this earth is my witness. I can wake up, you know. And doubt can show up for us as sort of doubting ourselves, just a myriad of ways that we can doubt ourselves or doubt other people, doubt choices that we've made, doubt our practice, doubt, doubt, doubt. Right? The antidote to doubt is faith. Yeah, coming in with a sense of confidence in our ability to meet what comes. Those of you who know me, sadha, which is the Pali word for faith, is one of my favorite words, and one of the most beautiful meanings to which it's assigned is this: to what do I rest? What do I rest my heart upon? Which again points to this abiding. Where am I resting my heart? Where am I living from? If I'm resting my heart in a spaciousness of wholesome qualities, oh, that's better. If I'm resting my heart in a place of fear, anxiety, scarcity, lack, terror, anger, it's unpleasant, right? And being able even to ask that question when we're caught in a storm of doubt, doubting ourselves, choices we've made, what all the myriad of things that we can doubt. Sweetie, what am I resting my heart upon in this moment? Can I tell? Sometimes it's hard. So it takes some doing, right? It's one of those questions to be lived into. But again, it's sort of a marker. Oh, it's mostly fear. Okay. So what's needed? Is it just disconnecting in some from whatever the thought that maybe that we're spinning on to come back to a more regulated place? If we're abiding in a house of fear, so to speak, I think it's safe to say this, the nervous system is dysregulated. Right? We are outside of our true selves. We're outside of a connection to our the perfections of the heart. Yeah. Okay. So what's needed? Okay, how can I come back as a way of settling the system? So those are areas to abide in that are less pleasant. I do want to share one thing. I was in a class the other night, and someone shared the he phrased it as the mantra of Sata, Sata, and it's surrender, allow, trust, and accept. I think that's a really beautiful, like, okay, can we surrender to what's happening? Can we allow it? Can we make space for it? This is here. I'm scared. Okay, scared. This is what scared feels like. Trust in our capacity to meet it. Okay. And sometimes we might need to pull in others, and then we may need allies in actual human form or in any kind of animal or spiritual realm that sometimes we the trusting in we can do it. Sometimes we need help. Okay. So can we trust in that, our capacity to find the help that we need? And then that accepting, okay, it's just like this, the kind of classic line, invitation with equanimity. Can I accept it as it is? It's sweetheart, it's just like this. Pleasant, unpleasant. In this moment, it's just like that. So therein invites a sense of spaciousness. Yeah. We're calling from the guided meditation. Can we abide in the sense of spaciousness? This too. Okay, what else? What else is here? Turning towards the part of ourselves that may be scared. Okay, tell me more. If it's too much, then we have someone with us. Yeah. Okay, tell us more. We're being able to ex to be a part of the conversation of what's actually happening. So those might be the less pleasant neighborhoods of abiding. And what I want to spend the rest of the evening tonight is talking about abiding beyond just the divine abodes. Those are built in. Yeah. But I want to talk about some other ones just as a way of, it's kind of again playing with a sense of what's possible. So Bhikkhu Anālaya has a new book called Abiding in Emptiness, which is in the resources tonight. In a little bit, I'll probably be sharing more poems, and I mentioned two books. But at the end of the evening, before we close, Carlita is going to put in a list of resources, so you'll get them. Don't worry about it. But I kind of want to sort of this book about abiding in emptiness. Christina Feldman had a talk on abiding in calmness. Ajahn Amaro has a talk on non-abiding. And I'm going to drop into these a little bit, but I want to kind of name these sort of different, what I would say, kind of felt experiences of abiding again. So an emptiness of non-abiding, of calmness. Dashiell Keltner's book on awe, abiding in awe, AWE. These ways in which it's like looking at a landscape and sort of deciding, well, where do I want to live? So these different, in addition to the divine abodes, there's these other ways in which of possibility. So to share, so from Christina Feldman's in the abiding in calmness, she's sort of blending equanimity and compassion, the divine abodes, as abiding in this quality of calmness, of contentedness, of steadiness, of ease, which I would also fold in as really kind of an embodiment of this earth element. Although you could probably make an argument that it's all the elements, but we are learning to be with, being with whatever is. It's important for us to see, as I mentioned before, where there's aversion, there's a sense of separation. And separation is the doorway to fear, to rejection, to judgment, all the things that keep us apart and separate. A pivotal thing, or a vital thing, I think, to be aware of in this time of there's such polarity, at least in the, so we're told. But being able to really catch, when am I in that place of blaming and othering and distancing and separating and withdrawing back in? It's fear-based. Does it feel good? No? Okay. So kind of coming back into the heart and identifying what's the sense of what's true. In this abiding in calmness, we're not banishing anything. We're willing to stay present, staying with what is as they actually are. A negative thought comes in, an angry thought, a rageful thought comes in. Often, the habitual response might be to sort of put more fuel on that fire, and we can get really revved up, like, get this, and then the person said this, and that, and 5 years ago, and then this, and then we're all up in arms, and the body's all agitated, and it's kind of a mess. So another option, okay, this thought of anger, this thought of rage, this thought of fear comes in, and let it go. A sense of the front, keeping the front and the back door open. And Christina Feldman points to this sort of non-stickiness. If it doesn't stick, it just moves through. Exhale, right? The sense of like, oh, I can let this go. Sometimes. And again, sometimes we need help in learning how to let it go. It's not so easy. But the setting, the aspiration of being able to, in the sense of abiding in a calmness, it's abiding in a non-stickiness. Like things don't stick. And we're allowing them to flow through. Oh, this is an angry thought. Oh, this is a jealous thought. This is some sort of negative thought that could have us clench and get tight, or let it go and notice, oh, there's that thought stream moving through. If we can have the sense of spaciousness, right? Oh, then things can come and go. It's okay. When we're tight and constricted, it's harder for things to move through. We're going to be stickier. Yeah, she's, that was a talk. Cultivating non-stickiness. It doesn't matter if there are thoughts. None of them are obstacles at all. They become obstacles because we stick to them. By taking on aversion, or we take on craving, we stick it to something, an aversion, and then the emotions get involved, the body gets involved. Then it's much harder to let it go. Yeah. The skills of being with, oh, this too, or tell me more. It doesn't stick, right? It's less sticky. There's a lessening of the holding, less grasping, less resistance. We cultivate a mind that dwells nowhere. The mind is present everywhere. We touch all things with a sense of calmness, calming within ourselves. And then everything calms down around us. Coming back to a point of balance, not think about getting, holding, having, getting rid of. We're just being with in this present moment. And this, she writes, as a finding a true refuge of calmness and balance, right? So this would be a sort of abiding in that sense of calmness, of balance, of equanimity. I listened to a talk of Ajahn Amaro on non-abiding. If you can't go forward or back and you can't stand still, where do you go? We continually try to resolve the conundrum about time and place. There's no finality of coming and going in life. A classic teaching of the Buddha, recorded in the Udananda, the inspired utterance, is this phrase. There is that sphere of being where there is no earth, no water, no fire, no wind, no experience of infinity. Here, there is neither this world nor another world, neither moon nor sun. This sphere of being I call neither a coming nor a going nor a staying still, neither a dying nor a reappearance. It has no basis, no evolution, no support. It is the end of suffering. It is being, how I understand this, in this very moment. It's this very moment without leading into the next one. It's just here. Exhale. Right? It's a moment. Yeah. That enlightenment is not the ground, the destination up there. It's freedom in this moment to not be attached, to not have the mind be leaning forward, leaning back, being nowhere. Abiding in the sense of spaciousness, which he's pointing to as non-abiding. It's just being a fullness in just being. Oh, in this moment, can all the sense doors be open and just a settling of, oh, it's just awareness. From Bhikkhu Anālayo, abiding in emptiness. As meditators, we must overcome the five hindrances in order to gain mental exclusion. That's indispensable for meditation to flourish. He talks about the external exclusion pointing from the time of the Buddha. They go into the forest, and in the forest, it's empty of elephants, it's empty of women, it's empty of anything that's sort of smacks of the marketplace. It's empty. Yeah. And emptiness, as he's Anālayo reporting from the Buddha, it's emptiness in the context is that quality of absence. There aren't a lot of people and things and distractions in the forest. If we're in an empty house, literally in a house that doesn't have much, there's not a lot of distraction. It's empty. There's an absence of things. There's a Pali word, dartha. It's the disturbance. It can be a hotness. It can be kind of a consistent distraction, which can be a lot of what our life is like. But being able to, or this is an interesting phrase of it too, that it's a not yetness. So there's a kind of a trying to catch up, a waiting, a moving, a discontent, right? A dissatisfaction, a jarringness of, I'm not there yet. Yeah. And what Anālayo is pointing to in the emptiness of, again, can you just abide in the sense of spaciousness in the absence of, yeah. From the Buddhist teaching, perception that the forest is empty, again, no elephants, no marketplace, perception of the earth, of infinite space, of consciousness, nothingness, signlessness, one leads to another, by which I mean that moment of non-abiding from Ajahn Amaro, oh, I can just pause here, again, in a moment, and that one moment of true abiding in a sense of stillness then can be a doorway into these other qualities of the of no-thingness. Yeah. The breakthrough to nirvana can happen when it becomes possible to allow the present moment to cease without mentally reaching out for the next moment, right? Abiding just here without reaching out. Really hard to do. We are not conditioned. We didn't grow up learning how to do that. But I love the idea of it. As an aspiration of, oh, what happens in a sit, or when we can just find those moments of, oh, just here, you know, allowing there to be a connection to that true stillness that abides within each of us. We just have to remember to walk through that door. Yeah. This is the supreme letting go, a culmination of the training and progressive levels of letting go that has been cultivated throughout meditations on emptiness and throughout the ages. From Rilke, to go into yourself and see how deep this place is from which your life flows. At its source, you will find the answer to the question whether you must create. Accept the answer just as it is given to you without trying to interpret it. Go into yourself and see how deep this place is from which your life flows. I am a true believer that that place from which our life flows is that still quietness. It's a place of vast opening, of vast spaciousness from which everything promulgates. Without it needing to, but just that abiding, yeah, in that vast openness. There's a poem, I don't have all of it with me, I'm just thinking of it, by Martha Postlewaite, of, can you create a dense clearing in the busyness of your life? Yeah. A lot of what I think these teachings point to is, how do we find that clearing such that the mind can rest, the body can rest, the heart can open. The demands of our life are fast moving and intense, and the overstimulation, wherever you kind of go, there's just a lot that comes at us all the time. So finding the moments of seclusion that Anolia was pointing to, we may not be in a forest that's devoid of elephants. Well, actually, we probably are. Should we go into a forest, we are likely to not be elephants. But sort of where can we find and under what senses can we make sense of seclusion? Certainly going on retreat has its own form, but just in the day-to-day, can we find moments, whether it's we're in the shower or walking outside, where we can find like, oh, here there's a seclusion, there's an absence of a lot of distraction. And sometimes it is supportive to have the external environment be less stimulating so that the mind can rest, which leads me to Dashiell, how do you say his last name? Keltner's book on awe, which is great. I totally recommend it. But what I really, he talks about, I'm going to shift gears here a little bit, but this is also, as we shift into awe, you can't have awe without sort of a mindful presence. Yeah. From Mary Oliver. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside the soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclimation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you but help to grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. I think Mary Oliver absolutely mastered the art of moving through the world with a sense of awe, a sense of being able to take delight in that which is right here. And in the book of awe, I think he teaches at UC Berkeley and is part of affiliated with the greater good, doing all kinds of great work. And they've done studies on awe and taking kids, teens out to do rafting trips, to sort of the wild awe when you're just out in all the elements. And he worked with a group of folks over 70. And he made the argument that from 55 to 75 is really when we're at our happiest. But then after 75, it can get a little more challenging because death is a little closer. So he asked this group of participants to take an awe walk. And basically it was just sort of whether you walk out your door and just allow this sort of childlike wonder to come back, to see things again, beginner's mind, whatever phrasing we want to use, but to allow ourselves, to allow the participants of the study to take delight in what's here. And they have pictures of people at the beginning, or to their pictures of two people at the beginning. And then after, I don't know, 6 weeks of taking their awe walks, their faces are totally different. And I think Jack Kornfield talks about sort of after, sort of retreats are like, well, a very long facial. But people who sort of could come on a retreat were all like tight and cramped. And then, you know, after 10 days of retreat, like, oh, everyone's face is, you know, 10 years younger looking because of being able to relax. And this invitation, I've done this since reading this book, of allowing oneself to go out in the world and just what can we be awed by? You know, the play of the light, it's spring. And the last couple of days I mentioned here in Colorado was like snow on the tulips or snow on the cherry blossoms. It's been amazing. But how can we allow that to bring some intentionality? Can we abide in awe even in the moment? You know, when we see the faces of those we love, can we allow ourselves to be awed by that? As it talks about being awed by our moral beauty, when people act with courage, when we take care of each other, you know, the myriad of different ways that we can be awed by others, positively and negatively. I mean, we can be awed by the horrors of the world, of which there are many. That's another talk. So there's that piece, but can we allow ourselves to pay attention to when we are awed by that which is beautiful and heart opening, of what does it feel like again, inviting in the visceral experience of, oh, this is what it feels like to have our eyes wide open to the beauty that is all around us. Let me shift gears. Okay, there's one more time. Okay, I'm gonna pass on that. All right. I'm gonna shift gears a little bit to move us into a guided meditation. And in order to set that up, I'm gonna read a few different poems just to kind of bring in some different sensations. What I want to have us explore together is where do we, let me rephrase that. How do we give structure to the place from which we truly want to abide? And we can talk about different heart qualities. And I want to have us play in a moment with really what does this look like if we were to create this dwelling, this home, this landscape from which we most want to live, from where we want our soul and heart to abide, to be resourced by, such that when we are more in the realm of fear and anxiety and worry, we can come back to this place. So I'm going to ask you to sit back a little bit. I'm going to read some poetry and then we're going to do a guided meditation if that feels like something you want to do. But I'm going to interrupt that for a moment because I want to read one poem before I do that. Because this poem that I'm going to read is one of my favorites by David Wise. And I feel like this is the bridge of kind of one of the ways that we can find this place within us. Okay, so it's called The Old Interior Angel. Young, male, and immortal as I was, I stopped at the first sight of that broken bridge. The taut cable snapped and the bridge planks concertinaed into a crazy jumble over the drop 400 feet to the craggy stream. I sat and watched the wind shiver on the broken planks as if by looking hard. Sorry, out of order. As if by looking hard and long enough, the light line might spontaneously repair itself, but watched in vain. An hour I sat in silence, checking each involuntary movement of the body toward that trembling bridge with a fearful mind and an emphatic shake of the head. Finally, facing defeat and about to go back the way I came to meet the others 3 days round by another pass, enter the old mountain woman with her stooped gait, her dark clothes, her dung basket clasped to her back, small feet shuffling for the precious golden brown fuel for cooking food. Intent on the ground, she glimpsed at my feet and looking up said, Namaste. I greet the god in you, the last syllable held like a song. I inclined my head and clasped my hands to reply, but before I could look up, she had turned her lined face and went straight across that shivering chaos of wood and broken steel in one movement. One day, the hero sits down, afraid to take another step, and the old interior angel limps slowly in with her no-nonsense compassion and her old secret and goes ahead. Namaste, you say, and follow. This old interior angel, I believe each one of us has a form. It may not be an angel in this form, but I believe we have that. And that ego, sort of as David Wise, him, the metaphor of him being like, I got to get out of the way and follow this, I think is such a beautiful teaching for all of us in the way of which, how do we allow ourselves to get out of our own way? To allow whatever version of our own old interior angel we have to come forth and lead us back to this place of true abiding. So, with that setup, a couple of poems I want to read. It's called Belonging by Rosemary Watala Trummer. And if it's true we are alone together. The way blades of grass are alone but exist as a field. Sometimes I feel it, the green fuse that ignites us, the wild thrum, the green fuse that ignites us, the wild thrum that unites us, an inner hum that reminds us of our shared humanity. Just as 30 trillion red blood cells join in one body to become one blood, Just as 136,000 notes make up one symphony, alone as we are, our small voices weave into the one big conversation. Our actions are essential to the one infinite story of what it is to be alive. When we feel alone, we belong to that grand communion of those who sometimes feel alone. We are the dust, dust that hopes, a rising of dust, a thrill of dust, a dust that dances in the light with all the other dust, the dust that makes this world. Boundaries by Lynn Ungar. The universe does not revolve around you. The stars and planets spinning through the ballroom of space dance with one another quite outside your small life. You cannot hold gravity or seasons, even air and water inevitably evade your grasp. Why not then let go? You could move through time like a shark through water, neither restless nor ceasing, absorbed in and absorbing the native element. Why pretend you can do otherwise? The world comes in at every pore, mixes in your blood before breath releases you into the world again. Do you think the fragile boundary of your skin could build a wall? Listen. Every molecule is humming its particular pitch. Of course you are a symphony. Whose tune do you think the planets are singing as they dance? And this last one, Homecoming by Linda Reuther. And the great mother said, "Come, my child, and give me all that you are. I'm not afraid of your strength and darkness, of your fear and pain. Give me your tears. They will be my rushing rivers and roaring oceans. Give me your rage. It will erupt into my molten volcanoes and rolling thunder. Give me your tired spirit. I will lay it to rest in my soft meadows. Give me your hopes and dreams. I will plant a field of sunflowers and arch rainbows in the sky. You are not too much for me. My arms and heart welcome your true fullness. There is room in my world for all of you, all that you are. I will cradle you in the boughs of my ancient redwoods and valleys of my gentle rolling hills. My soft winds will sing you lullabies and soothe your burdened heart. Release your deep pain. You are not alone, and you have never been alone." I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. Just check in how these poets' words landed or perhaps didn't. And I want to call in the profound spaciousness that I take from that last poem, of that invitation to be at home in the world, invitation of the Great Mother saying, "I got you, all of you." And if we allow ourselves to hear that invitation, that welcoming, that homecoming invitation of the Great Mother, can we then extend that to ourselves? Can we allow ourselves to accept all of us, to not be scared of the parts of ourselves, to have the space for our strengths and fears, our darkness and pain, and to have the space for our awe and our delight and our joy? And what might this place be that you would create that could hold all of you, that could nurture all of you, a place in which you could abide fully, a place suffused with a sense of stillness, of awe, of beauty? And I'm going to invite you to add, what other heart qualities might you include that would go into the framing of this House of Belonging, to borrow from David White, that you would create to allow this place of true abiding. If you were to frame this house, so to speak, with heart qualities of the divine abodes, perhaps loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity, the close cousins of forgiveness and generosity, folding in qualities of the paramis, truthfulness, patience, wisdom, effort, integrity, generosity. What other qualities come to mind that will most nurture your true self? Laughter, humility. Caring, again, just allow whatever words come almost to be. It's not really becoming the fabric, but that's what comes to mind, becoming the fabric of which you're weaving this true abiding for your heart, your soul, your Buddha nature, your own goodness, the truth of your goodness that you can come back to again and again. What's the image that comes to mind? And it may be a structure of some kind. It may just be a vast expanse of an alpine meadow, a lake, a forest, whatever it is. Sort of allow the imagination to fill in this refuge that is your birthright. Allowing it to take form, to take shape, to take definition. So you will always know the way back. The way home to your true self. And let yourself look around at that which you have created. Open up the sense doors. What might it smell like? The play of the light. What sounds do you hear? Is there a taste in your tongue? The windows are open. What's the sense? Does a gentle breeze blow through? Allow it to become as real and clear as possible. This is the place of your true belonging, of true abiding. A place of true refuge. So, thank you so much for your kind attention this evening. I'm going to stop here. Oh, one more poem I could share to close this out. Yeah. All right. This is by Roger Robinson. A Portable Paradise. And if I speak of paradise, then I'm speaking of my grandmother, who told me to carry it always on my person, concealed, so no one else would know but me. That way they can't steal it, she'd say. And if life puts you under pressure, traces its ridges in your pocket, smell its piney scent on your handkerchief, hum its anthem under your breath. And if your stresses are sustained and daily, get yourself to an empty room, be it a hotel, a hostel, or a hovel. Find a lamp and empty your paradise onto a desk. Your white sands, green hills, and fresh fish. Shine the lamp on it like the fresh hope of morning, and keep staring at it till you sleep. And may this place of abiding that you may have formed in your mind be that paradise that you can visit time and time again. So thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Carlita. Thank you for hosting us so beautifully. Please come back. I'll be teaching more in other places in the fall. So a blessing to be with you all. Be safe, everyone.